You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Janet Biggs. Janet, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
Janet, you're in Brooklyn. It's nearing the end of March in 2021. It's been a year of the pandemic. How has that affected your studio practice? I know you've been in Brooklyn the whole time. Has that how has that changed? Yeah, your studio practice, either in content or physically.
You know, I joke that I don't have a studio practice. I have a travel practice. So clearly, now being in my home for a year has really changed how I've had to think about work, approach work, and what production looks like these days for me. And I think back to a year ago, actually a little more than a year ago on March 6th when I was in Florida launching Three Minerals up to the International Space Station to come back to New York to then just stop. And I think like most artists, it's been a fluid process that feels fluid at sometimes and then absolutely grinds to a halt at others. I had bursts of energy initially. I ground to a big halt in the middle, and I've been relatively productive of late.
And let's talk about what the productivity is of late, because right, you're not traveling, and you're based, you know, in Brooklyn and at home. So, what is the recent work that you've been involved in?
The project that I launched the Minerals up to the International Space Station, which was part of MIT Media Lab's Space Exploration Initiative, was a project that was supposed to be a movie or a longer film talking about why I sent why three minerals were collected and launched up to the ISS. And just to briefly say, one of the minerals was a lunar meteorite, and we had made a payload that had three different chambers, one that was still and benign, so it would experience zero gravity, and the other two rotated with centripetal acceleration, so that one mimicked lunar gravity and one mimicked Martian gravity. And so I had sent a lunar meteorite back up to experience lunar gravity. I sent a red jasper quartz, which I found on a Mars simulation mission that I participated in the desert of Utah, up to experience Martian gravity for the very first time. And I sent a halite crystal that was from my grandfather's collection. My grandfather was an amateur mineral collector who developed Alzheimer's kind of late in life, and long after he could remember any family members, he could identify really specific details from the minerals in his collection. So they became these moments of presence for him, in like the, you know, that vast sea of loss that is Alzheimer's disease. And so I sent the crystal that held some of his last memories up to become weightless. And that project is interesting because it was supposed to sort of end with that poetic moment of the launch. But then the pandemic happened, and so my minerals are in space circling the globe 16 times a day, and the pandemic is circling down here, and I just can't make that project stop. So I tend to write narratives when I can't sleep. It's become the never-ending project, as far as I can tell.
So let's talk about that project a little more, because, you know, of course that's fascinating, and yeah, it does tie into the pandemic, and this never-ending project is so fascinating. To just walk through, and I know about this, but to just explain to everyone how did that come about? Why are minerals going to Mars? Why is that your project, and how does that work exactly? You were invited through NASA, and what happened exactly, and what's your goal with that?
Sure. So the project was part, as I said, it was part of the MIT Media Lab Space Exploration Initiative, and they very graciously sent out an international call for projects, and the curator of the MIT's initiative had seen my work and encouraged me to apply, which I did. So that's really how that started, and I was one of a number. I was one of eight artists that were able to send projects up on this payload, and mine was more of, you know, the science was the sort of science in the field of collecting the minerals was my strong connection to connection to real data collection, whereas a lot of the other artists were sending up projects that they were hoping to collect data from the actual experience of weightlessness. I have been working with kind of art and science collaborations or integrations initiatives for a number of years, and they have ranged everything from expeditions to the Arctic on climate change to working with neurologists, specifically looking at something like Alzheimer's and the biological underpinnings of that.
And so now that these minerals, you're saying it's kind of never-ending. They were meant to go to Mars, but they never got there? Or what do you mean by
that? Well, no, they did go. They were meant to go to the International Space Station, and they did go. And they were housed on the International Space Station for just over a month. We were not completely sure they would get back. We were hoping so, especially some of the other participants who needed the data. But they did come back. And so they were launched before there was shut down, in the States at least. And then they came back to, especially in New York, we were in complete lockdown when they came back. And our entire payload ended up going into quarantine, not because they were so worried about the minerals. You know, the International Space Station was one of the few places that humans existed and the virus did not. But it was more that that all the facilities that collected thing, you know, the payload coming back from the ISS had been shut down because of the pandemic, and people were not working in those facilities. So, but after a few months, my minerals arrived back home, which was a shockingly emotional moment for me.
Yeah, that's so tell me more about that. So they arrived back home, and that's sort of kind of remarkable, right? The journey that they've had. And then what do you do with them? How does this make their way to the public in terms of your work?
Well, this is sort of where I'm sitting and in some ways battling right now. I really did have an initial intent for the project, and which was to create a film that would talk about the backstory of why these minerals were collected and why I sent them up. And now it has evolved into, or is evolving into, something that is unknown to me and clearly unpredictable, because our existence is that right now, even more so. And so I'm really sort of just letting this project be and define itself as it goes. And so because of that, I've gone to some other really concrete projects that I'm working on, especially one that I'm doing with CERN at the moment, and let the film just find its own path. I think often when things develop in ways that you can't control, it presents possibility. And if you're, you know, potentially quiet enough to pay attention, it might be a better piece.
That's interesting, and so that's and exciting. That's very exciting. What else are you working on at the moment? Is there another project or two that you want to discuss that you're currently involved in?
Sure. There's one that I'm sort of knee-deep in right now. I've been working on a collaboration with the Arts at CERN. I was supposed to spend the summer at CERN, but, you know, instead spent it in my kitchen or, you know, in my studio. But it's the collaboration is called the Arts at CERN RE Collaboration. And this is, so the Arts at CERN is a program that, for those who are not familiar with CERN, CERN is the European Organization for Nuclear Research. And ARI is the Integrated Arts Research Initiative, which is coming out of University of Kansas's Spencer Museum. And I was invited to participate, to generate a project as part of this arts research initiative. And so I have a strong interest in CERN, and I've been there in the past to film. And so they thought it would be interesting to pair me with a high-energy nuclear physicist, to Daniel Tapia Takai. And I'm also working with an applied mathematician, Agnieszka Miedler, and Joey Orr, who's the curator for research at the Spencer. And then we have a couple interns that are working with us as well. And so we're right now, what normally would have happened is we all would have gone off to CERN for the summer, and I would have sort of vampired the other disciplines in terms of information and sort of tried to absorb as much as I possibly could, and then probably come back to my studio and make something. And that's a relatively normal procedure for art and science collaborations in the past for me. And because we weren't able to do that, we've now been having, we talk for about 2 hours every week, and we've been doing that for a year. And so this collaboration has this new depth that I've never experienced and has become really generative of each other and substantive within each of our individual fields. And that's very new. So far we have submitted a letter of intent to SNOMAS, which is the International Conference for Physics, and we've been invited to submit a white paper. We have done a sort of public-facing moment for Groundwork, which is part of A2RU's art and science platform. And on April 8th, we're going to be doing a performance, which is sponsored by, or at least presented by, the Kristen Tierney Gallery. And it will involve trying to figure out how to use quantum mechanics on movement, in this case, movement being both physical and sound. So we're working with a dancer, Vincent Fraley, who's amazing, and a violinist, Earl Vanneen, and his quartet, which is a Seven Sons quartet. And we're trying to figure out, if we identify each of the performers as an initial state, can we run a matrix that will use singular value decomposition to find the essence of their sound, their movement? And then essentially we are trying to predict a future state or states.
Okay, so
for each one of these performers.
I don't know about singular value decomposition or exactly what that means. So how will the audience see this? What do they have to know to understand this? It sounds fascinating, and this is what a lot of this research, it sounds like, is culminating in, among other things, like the papers you're presenting. But how does the audience know, and what's happening? What will that mean to the audience? Will they understand that this is about quantum movements and the phrase that you just mentioned that I didn't understand?
Uh-huh. Well, uh-huh. Let me start by saying that the one thing, I was laughing the other day that my time in quarantine has been, sort of from someone without a math or physics background, been sort of boning up on like trying to get up to speed on understanding when I'm talking to the mathematician and the physicist. And so I certainly have that experience of entering a project with a different level of information and knowledge than my collaborators. And so I think that's going to be, we understand that our audience will be a wide range of people coming from the arts, coming from the sciences, with a lot of different levels of understanding. And so we certainly want to give some information. So we've got, you know, a very brief text about what singular value decomposition is. We have a few moments where you see our process, so that you see the physicist and the mathematician trying to figure out exactly how to predict a future from an initial state, being the performers. But a lot of it is also, you know, this is a moment to find the poetry within the science. And so there's so many levels of information that can't be communicated. And so what we're hoping to convey is an interest to, a new experience and perhaps interest to learn more. And so we're running the performance like two experiments, one that will work from a lower dimension and predict a higher dimension, or work towards through a matrix, work to a higher dimension, and one that will be from a higher dimension and then work towards a lower dimension. Do you want me to go more specific on exactly what you'll see?
Yeah, perhaps, because like you're saying, this is a moment when, you know, the poetry of all this comes through. And so how does that happen? You can either explain how that happens in terms of what the audience will potentially absorb and see, yeah, or get more specific about what you just said.
Sure. There will be a narrative that's interwoven that is very much rooted in sort of personal experience. It actually is rooted in my personal experience of when I was a child. I had real hard time with yesterday, today, and tomorrow. The concepts of time were really lost to me, and which worried my parents. And eventually, I did grasp them, but it was as if there were, you know, my synaptic connections weren't pruning themselves effectively, and so it sort of starts from that personal narrative, and then weaves into these experiments where you actually have specific data, so that the dancer has choreographed to the music that the quartet is playing, and we have video of that dancer's movement, that choreographed movement. And what we've done is run this matrix that finds the singular value decomposition, which is somewhat similar to low resolution. It's essentially, you know, it keeps reducing something until that thing, to right before that moment when that thing is no longer itself. And then essentially what we do is we layer, there are ways to predict multiple views of that or perspectives of that, and you can then recomposite those, and then that can give you potentially a different future. And so we're asking the mathematics, the physics and mathematics, to do that. And then we're also asking the performers themselves to find what they would think is the lowest possible point, the essence of their work, and then have this moment of comparison between a human response and a mathematic and physics response.
Well, that sounds very interesting. And when do you imagine this being produced? This would be at the gallery, so it would be a performance inside a gallery?
No, it's because of the continued pandemic. It's a live stream performance, and it's happening this coming April 8th at 7 p.m., although it will also be recorded, and so there'll be access to it past that moment. And if people are interested, it's on the Kristen Tierney Gallery events page. You can RSVP and they'll send you. It'll be live streamed over Vimeo.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'll put a link to that in here as well. Well, that sounds very exciting. And congratulations on what sounds like a huge project and collaboration. I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, this is kind of... In relationship to this project, I have a stack of books, Introduction to Physics. I have Alice and Bob Meet the Wall of Fire, which is a collection out of Quanta. I have Einstein's Dreams, which is a lovely novel by Alan Lightman that is sitting right next to me. And when I'm not trying to get myself up to speed in terms of physics, the book that I've been finding is lovely and inspiring for me is The Sublimity of Document, which is Cinema as Diorama by Scott McDonald. So that's my stack. And at the bottom of the stack, which should never be at the bottom, of course, is Women Artists by Linda Nochlin.
I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I'm excited about what's coming up in the live stream, so I look forward to that. And I just want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.